Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with everybody. We're going to have some fun today. We're going to have some fun tomorrow, too. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Dick Girardi on the show today. Brendan Quinn on the show today. You're on the show today. Sean's on the show today.
We are. Good afternoon, sir.
Sean, great to have you here, my friend. Lot to talk about. I know, Sean, you wanted to bring up the Christian Hackenberg interview situation. I haven't really talked about that.
Yeah, I found it last Friday. It was on Peter King's Sports Illustrated, themmqb.com. And, there was a couple of reports out there regarding Christian Hackenberg since the combine and the pro day, talking to various pro coaches, and pro coaches hearing things from Christian that they were kind of unexpected. They were unexpected to hear in regards to his numbers coming down, his second and third year at Penn State. And I think it just brought the question out, did it have something to do with the coaching, or was it because of the sanctions and the thin offensive line? Maybe it had something to do with that.
Well, I think I've talked about before when it comes to him that I think actually a positive for him is that he went from a 12 touchdown, let me know if these numbers are right. I think 12 touchdown, 16 interception season as a sophomore to a 16 touchdown, 6 interception season as a junior. Now, I think that is, to me, that's significant. The number of sacks is the part that's disconcerting, and what the number of sacks may have done along the way to his footwork, which is really important, I think is also something that you need to look into. You need to see what that's done. The scheme that they ran here, Bill O'Brien ran basically the same scheme they were using with the Patriots, and we saw that. The scheme that was used here the last couple of years, more of a West Coast offense. Well, guess what? In the NFL, you run Bill O'Brien schemes, and you also run West Coast offense schemes. I mean, so it's not really schematically. I mean, you drop back, you have reads. I mean, one area that he should be able to knock it out of the ballpark is where they start talking to him about pre-snap. Who's the mic? Who's up? Who's down? How do you slide a protection? He should be able to knock that out of the park because both systems required you to do that. And I think that what we are in is that if you're not around a practice all the time and see what they've got to work on in a practice, okay, who's the mic? Okay, telling the lineman, okay, he's considered down, he's considered up. Okay, I'm going to flip the running back over here because I'm looking over here and I'm telling you, I think the blitz is coming from over here. Those are important areas that, for example, let's take the quarterback from Baylor that was drafted by the New York Jets. He broke, you name the record, and he broke it at Baylor. He can't handle being with the Jets right now. Because guess what they don't do at Baylor? At Baylor, they do not do anything pre-snap. There is no designation of who the mic is on the defense. There is no designation as to whether, hey, look, we're in a slide protection, we're going to, flip the tail back over, that guy's considered up, that guy's considered down, those, which are all to let the linemen know exactly where they're going to go with the protection on the play. They don't do that at Baylor. So Bryce Petty really struggled with the Jets to the point where one day he walked off the practice field, looked around and said, because it's that much of a leap, and you have to do that in the pros. You have to. So when you look at what Bill O'Brien did, and he did a great job with Christian the 1 year, but then systemically, that still stayed the same in this offense. But he was also in a position where the protection breakdowns hurt him. He was sacked 103 times in 3 years. He was sacked 83 times the last 2 years. And I mentioned Cody Kessler of USC. Not quite the, you know, a similar situation. Not exactly the same. Because it didn't get down to 62 scholarship players like it did here. It got down to 75 at USC. But he was sacked 100 times in the same three-year span. Now, what coaches are not going to like, and what general managers are not going to like, is if he said some derogatory stuff about the staff here. They're not going to like that. That actually does not play well to that room. It doesn't hurt the Penn State coaching staff. It hurts him if that's what he did. And I have not read Peter's column, so I don't know. And, you know, when it comes to the Hackenberg relationship with this staff and the Hackenberg relationship with Penn State, this has been something since the dawn of him verbally committing until now that has been a constant story over and over and over and over again. Publicly, he has always said the right things. Publicly, this staff about him has always said the right things. I will say this. Christian Hackenberg did show up at three spring practices in the past week. And there are a couple things. You're saying, okay, so what, he was at practice. It's a little bit more than that. And again, that's okay. Number one, he felt comfortable going. And number two, they felt comfortable having him. Okay? Now, I'm not going to say this is much to do about nothing, because Peter King has great sources, and they talk with him. Peter is, to his credit, has, and by the way, I'm really happy he's going to keep his Monday morning quarterback thing. We're going to get him on the, like, we're going to get him on the show, and then he can explain to everybody he was an exponentially better first baseman than I was.
The write-up on the MMQB.com is from Robert Klemko.
Oh, Robert Klemko. Okay, yep. He wrote it. Okay.
Yep.
All right, so Peter didn't write it. Robert Klemko did. But it doesn't mean he's not well-sourced either. I mean, obviously. But those conversations are supposed to stay private. I don't know. Is anything private anymore?
Thanks to smartphones, probably not.
No, probably not. But it is an issue. But on the current football team, it is not an issue. And the reason it's not an issue on the current football team here is that they've really changed over. They've turned the page. And they had to turn the page because they have a different offensive coordinator and they have a different style of quarterback, whether it's going to be Tommy Stevens or Trace McSorley, running the operation. I remember talking with Jerry DiNardo from BTN, and this is when the depth of the sanction really were starting to grab its hooks into the program here. He was talking about Christian, and he looked at me, he says, Steve, he says, you know what? He says, when you're in a situation like this, having a mobile quarterback would really, really help. He says, because they're just not going to be able to protect them because you can't recruit as many guys in that area. Well, that was right. And you'll see that there's going to be far more mobility in the quarterback. And it's not as if Christian can run. It's not that Christian can't run. Because he can run. I mean, you saw he ran a 4.79 at the combine. I know his best time here was a 4.72. And McSorley's speed-wise is about the same neighborhood. Maybe a little quicker. And Stevens can run, too. I mean, Stevens can really run. He busted one yesterday that was pretty impressive. But you have a different style of offense. Penn State, this is not going to be the kind of offense that you've watched Penn State play with Christian at quarterback. And it's not going to be really the kind of offense that you saw with Michael Robinson or Darrell Clark, although it's closer to the Robinson-Clark thing than it was for the past 3 years. And actually going back to Matt McGloin, obviously the past, 5 years. It's just not going to be. And I think that it is, it's more in tune with what the personnel happens to be. I think you're going to find that the offense Penn State runs now is going to be, I think you're going to find it fun, actually, to be honest with you. I think you're going to find it to be a lot of fun. But for whatever reason, the Hackenberg, I remember we had to sit down. I always have to do Sunday interviews with the players. That's why, for example, Mark Wogenrich, for example, of the Allentown Morning Call, had the first extensive interview with Saquon Barkley. That is in print. And that's fine because that's Saquon's home area, and that's why it makes sense. And Saquon is really well-spoken, very intelligent. But because of the Sunday interviews, I've already interviewed him 3 different times. And I've related to the fans here on the show about how articulate he is, how he, you know, how intelligent he is. That's how, for example, when he scored a touchdown, I related that story for the first time about, hey, when he points up into the stands, he's pointing to his parents. And that's how I got it. In talking to him on Sundays. Well, I remember Christian Hackenberg's sophomore year. There's all this swirl about Bill O'Brien, about him, and so forth. And so one of the Sunday interviews, we had to sit down, and I had to ask him, you know, that was part of the charge. What about John Donovan? What about James Franklin? What about Ricky Ronnie? And Hackenberg was, he answered everything exactly the way the program would hope he would answer the questions. But after a while, it gets wearing, the whole thing. Now, he worked out for the Cowboys, and he worked out for the Eagles. And I think he has all the tools to be a fine pro quarterback. Would he be a fine pro quarterback out of the gate first year? No. I think he needs a full year to really watch what's going on, and then I think be given an opportunity to compete for a job. But in terms of the tools that he has, arm strength, very good vision, footwork that needs improving, but looked to me when I watched him on Pro Day, really it improved a lot. Really liked his footwork. I thought he, you know, that looked like a pretty polished situation. And I know, Ricky Ronnie worked hard with him on his footwork here. This was not like one of those, like, oh, his footwork struggling? Oh, I didn't realize that. I'm glad the pros took care of it. No. Ricky Ronnie worked with him on that all the time when he was the quarterback coach. But for some reason, this dynamic has played out like a soap opera over the last couple of years. And all I can tell you is what I see, and all I can tell you is what I've watched the last 2 years. Now, who am I? I'm just somebody that was standing there every day. He's never said a derogatory word to me about anybody. But I wasn't the one asking him the questions in the interview rooms either, so I wasn't sitting there. So whether he did or he didn't, Robert Klemko is a very good reporter. And as always, it's going to make great copy around here. We'll come back with more in a moment. Today, Dick Girardi on the show. Brendan Quinn on the show. Tomorrow, Patrick James from North Carolina on the show. Final Four is coming up. More in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. By the way, Christian Hackenberg did work out for the Dallas Cowboys. He is scheduled to work out with the Philadelphia Eagles a week from tomorrow. In fact, the Eagles are working them all out. Do you realize that? The Eagles are working them all out. Jared Goff, Monday night. Carson Wentz, last night. Paxton Lynch, yep, they're talking with him too. He is working out today. And then Christian Hackenberg is a week from tomorrow. They signed Sam Bradford to a two-year, $36 million deal, of which $26 million is guaranteed. And Christian's going to work out for the Eagles next Friday, the 8th of April. But they have this week, it's been Jared Goff, Carson Wentz. Today, it's Paxton Lynch. And then on the 8th, it's Christian. Find that very interesting. The Eagles are taking long, hard looks at quarterbacks. Well, these are all better prototypes than Matt Barkley. And, you know, Matt Barkley had himself a great college career, but he's not the biggest of prospects. I mean, you take a look at, in terms of passing the look test, Christian passes the look test like that. And by the way, yes, can really hit a golf ball. So if Doug Peterson wants to take him out and play a round of golf at Marion, go ahead. Christian told me he's a 12 handicap. His goal is to get to a 6. Next half hour, we're going to talk to Dick Girardi. Actually, next hour, we'll talk to Dick.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. The Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Good for the Boston Red Sox. They're not going to sit there and play somebody just because the price tag is high. They're going to pay Pablo Sandoval $95 million over 5 years, so he obviously has to be the starting third baseman. Nope. John Farrell looked over and said, nope, Travis Shaw's had a better spring. He's going to start. Good. All right, this day in sports history. 1906, the Intercollegiate Athletic Association of the United States was founded to set rules in amateur sports. Okay, here's one for you. You can't get any money. All right, we're done. Meeting's over. The organization became the NCAA in 1910. We can have our own debate about that later. 1931, this was the day in Kansas that Newt Rockne died in a plane crash. 1968, Seattle chose the nickname the Pilots for their new American League franchise. They lasted in Seattle 1 year. They are now the Milwaukee Brewers. 1973, Muhammad Ali wore a $10,000 robe with the moniker, the People's Champion, inscribed on it. Ali then lost the fight to Ken Norton. Elvis Presley had given the robe to Ali January 2nd of 71. Meanwhile, Martina Hingis, at the age of 16, became the youngest women's tennis player to reach the number one ranking in the world in 1997. And in 2003, former President George H.W. Bush threw out the ceremonial first pitch at the season opener between the Reds and the Pittsburgh Pirates. That's this day in sports history. Play-by-play call today, next half hour. Dick Girardi joins us on his way to the Final Four in the next half hour. Final half hour, Brendan Quinn. I'm going to break down what's going on at Michigan, what they're doing. All right, so we get everybody up to date on what's going on there. Sports-wise, a quiet day today. There's not a lot going on. The United States women's national team says that the U.S. Soccer Federation needs to have equal pay for men and women. They put that story out. NFL prospect was asked what he would use to kill someone. Well, you're sitting there, and if you're asked that question, how do you respond to it? I look at him and go, like, get out of here. And I don't, you know, guess what? I don't need to play for you. All right? Jalen Mills is the one who was asked by an unnamed team whether he would choose a knife or a gun to kill a person, according to CBS Sports. LSU safety explained that the gun was seen as the better answer because choosing the knife means that a person is killing for fun because you have to continuously stab someone. You don't answer the question. You just look at him and say, I'm not answering a stupid question like that. Just tell them. They say, hey, if you want to be drafted, fine. Well, guess what? I'd like to be drafted by somebody who doesn't ask me stupid questions. That would be my response. I'm not going to answer that stupid question. That's dumb. To mention with Eli Apple, of course, everybody knows what he was asked. There are a lot of people, by the way, mock drafts that have the Steelers drafting Eli Apple. He would be a very good pick. I really liked how he developed at Ohio State a lot. There are a couple guys on that Ohio State team where it's pretty obvious. I think everyone knows I have a very high opinion of Zeke Elliott. But of the linebacking group that they have, the guy in that linebacking group that I really like is Darren Lee. From the time he came in till now, he's a first-round pick to me. He is a first-round pick to me. Darren Lee, I think, is going to be a good NFL linebacker. Those are some of the – he and Eli Apple are two of the more underrated Ohio State prospects going into this draft. Austin Johnson's done well. He looks like he's going to be a second-round pick. I think Carl Nassib's going to be second or third round. I'm really impressed with the fact that Zettel decided to go out, and Anthony worked on offense at Pro Day. He's trying to show them some versatility. He's in an interesting spot. He's 275 pounds right now. Yeah, it's like a defensive end. Yeah. Well, maybe too light to be a DT in the league. Okay. A little bit of a tweener. But if you can show some versatility for him, they do love that, and he showed that. You know what really struck me about Zettel? Zettel ran really great routes. And one of the things that you should look at, if you're talking about a guy that's a really good route runner, you know, it's not, you know, now look, obviously the teams will know whether they're running the right depth, so I understand that. But watch guys who cut on their routes. If a guy's cutting on his route, he knows how to run a route. If you watch a guy and he's rounding his route, route, he becomes exponentially easier to cover. And that's what struck me about Zettel. I'm watching him out there. He's out there cutting his routes. You're like, what the heck? He said, wow. I said, he runs routes more precisely than does a lot of guys do. Very impressive. Final four coming up. Let's see. How about the South? Did you see the South Carolina NCAA story?
No, I didn't catch that one.
The NCAA is apologizing to South Carolina for a text that was errantly sent to the school that said the NCAA Vice President of the Men's Basketball Championship, Dan Gavitt, released a statement explaining what happened because they were sent a text on Selection Sunday that erroneously said the Gamecocks had been selected to the NCAA tournament. Said, I take full responsibility for this clerical error and apologize to Coach Martin, his staff, team, the entire University of South Carolina community, blah, blah, blah. You know, the usual blah, blah. Unfortunately, during the selection show, a junior men's basketball staff member mistakenly sent a text to a member of the University of South Carolina athletic department staff on an app that we used for the first time for the 2016 tournament. The text was supposed to go to all teams congratulating them for making the tournament. Regrettably, a text meant for another institution went to South Carolina instead. Yep. Greg Martin said, quote, I'm past all that. Good for him. The errant text wasn't the only mix-up that occurred on Selection Sunday as someone tweeted a bracket at 6:30, about midway through the selection show televised by CBS, cautioning, spoiler alert, full bracket. The post showed the field of 68. By then, the South and West regions had been revealed, and they were identical to the leaked versions. The NCAA is investigating the incident. Martin actually saw that and then did not see South Carolina's name on the list of teams still to go.
And how ironic, okay. South Carolina not getting in the tournament. Vanderbilt gets in the tournament, and Coach Stallings, of course, no longer at Vanderbilt.
he's at Pitt now. And, of course, you know I know Kevin.
That's right.
Because his son Jacob Stallings played for the Spikes one summer a couple of years ago.
And doing pretty well here in spring training.
Yeah, doing well in spring training. I expect Jacob to start the year in Altoona is what I expect. And Kevin was a frequent visitor to the ballpark and was a frequent visitor joining me in the broadcast booth. I had a good time with him. I personally like him a lot. I think he'll do fine at Pitt. He'll do well. The NIT championship game is tonight. It is Valpo against George Washington tonight. So there is college basketball this evening. And, I mean, to me, one of the bigger stories of the day is the fact that, look, the Red Sox spent $95 million, 5 years, Pablo Sandoval. Three-time World Series champion with the Giants. Travis Shaw is making $515,000. He had 13 home runs last year and 226 plate appearances. Now, for the most part, Shaw has played at first base. But when he played at Kent State, which includes him playing some games here at Penn State, he was a third baseman. And the one thing that you'll see is that Shaw had a red-hot start at the plate in the spring, but he's only one for his last 19 at the plate. Sandoval is coming off, obviously, a mediocre season. His defense, a big problem. And John Farrell suggested that Sandoval's longstanding issue with controlling his weight has limited his range and agility. And Sandoval said he worked on it all winter. They svelte. He came into camp and looked as heavy as he did last season. So, and that wasn't the only one. I mean, Farrell looked at Shaw and Sandoval. He picked Shaw, not the high-priced Sandoval. Then they took Rosny Castillo, who was signed to a 7-year, $72 million deal when he left Cuba 2 years ago. He's the fifth outfielder. Brock Holt, who played here in State College, and veteran Chris Young are the primary pieces to be a left field platoon. Sandoval, by the way, expressed disappointment over Farrell's decision, but he also said he saw it coming. He said after missing 6 days recently with stiffness in his lower back, Sandoval played a split squad game Wednesday with a combination of reserve infielders, while Shaw played the split squad game with Hanley Ramirez, Dustin Pedroia, and Xander Bogaerts. That normally is a tip-off where you're going. So, I mean, look, you can get married to the fact that you're paying somebody. Look, we got to somehow get the money back on this guy. He's $95 million over 5 years. Well, guess what? If the other guys can help you win, you go with the other guy. You know, this is professional baseball, which means you go with who helps you win. Red Sox have finished in last place in each of the last 2 years after winning the World Series in 13. In New England, you don't have time to mess around with the fan base or the media when it comes to doing these things. They are not going to tolerate it. I can tell you that in no uncertain terms. So good for them. Now, if Shaw's lousy, then it doesn't pan out, then not good for them. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors has the cure for March sadness.
It's Ford Truck Month.
Sunbury Motors Ford has your truck. So avoid March sadness and don't miss these Truck Month deals. Choose from over 100 new F-150s with savings over 10 grand. F-150s start as low as $25,219. The Ford F-150 has been the number one selling truck 39 consecutive years.
There's one sold every 42 seconds.
Pick from over 65 new 2016 Ford Escapes and take $3,750 off. And they start from just $20,490. Get 0% financing for just 60 months on all 2016 Escapes, Explorers, and Expeditions. And 2015 Edges and F-150s during SMC's March Truck Sale. Sunbury Motors is also the area's premier commercial truck center, stocking super duties like chassis cabs, crew cabs, dualies, and diesels. Avoid March sadness. Come get your truck at Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza.
Great to have you with us as we roll through this Thursday together. As we go through and get ready for the Final Four, we'll have Dick Girardi on to talk about that in the next half hour. And then Brendan Quinn on the Michigan situation there with their spring game coming up and how things have gone for them in the spring. But, you know, it's always intriguing when you're talking about everything Jim Harbaugh has done to this point. And Quinny will at least get us up to date on all that and a lot more. So, I mean, you got to admit, there's never a dull moment with the guy, right? Really, there isn't. And then tomorrow, Patrick James will join us, who covers North Carolina basketball. Get him on the show, get his perspective as to what Now, where they are, you know, North Carolina might be best equipped in this situation, and here's the reason why. And I'm not talking from a talent point of view. I'm talking from a stylistic point of view. This is a lousy place to shoot. Lousy. In fact, I've done even more research on this place. Three-point shooting in this building. 32%. That's it. Overall shooting, 39.8%. I don't know why it's like this. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to guess it's depth perception. It's a cavernous-looking place, without question. And when you look at let's take Lucas Oil Stadium. Lucas Oil Stadium, when they built it with the idea they're going to have the Final Four there. That does make a difference in terms of how the stadium is. The NRG Stadium in Houston was built for the Houston Texans. It was built by Bob McNair. And it was about $700 million plus, which in today's market is an absolute bargain. But this was not built for basketball. It was built to be, they can play basketball in it, but it wasn't built for basketball. Lucas Oil Stadium at least was built in such a way where they knew that every 5 years they were getting the Final Four. It's built into the NCAA contract that Indianapolis gets the Final Four every 5 years. So they know going in they're going to get it. So that's why when they built Lucas Oil Stadium there to replace the RCA Dome, it does, yeah. You know, it gives you a decent enough basketball feel because they built it with that in mind, knowing that they're going to do it every 5 years there. When Lucas Oil Stadium was built, the RCA Dome was next to it, 60,000-seat stadium. That was the RCA Dome. I did a game in there in 2000. Ryan Permanti won it with a field goal at the end. And they had Antoine Randall, Ella quarterback, and so forth. I remember when they were building Lucas Oil Stadium and the RCA Dome was still up. You would be amazed that Lucas Oil Stadium is so cavernous, it made the RCA Dome look like the Jordan Center next to Beaver Stadium. Dick Girardi has told me that NRG Stadium, where the Texans play, which is right next to the Astrodome is still up, dwarfs the Astrodome. Dwarfs it. That's how cavernous the place is.
So with Syracuse, since they play at home in a dome, would that give them an advantage this weekend?
Does not, and here's the reason why. Syracuse, when they play their basketball game, Sean, the court is in the end zone. So it is put in the end zone, and it's tight in that end zone, and it's more of a natural arena feel. I've done two games at Syracuse. And even though it's huge, this is different. They're going to put Syracuse does not put the court in the center of the field and then build around it. The court is in the end zone, so it already has a natural barrier to begin with. I did a game in the Georgia Dome 15 years ago, and that's where they put the court was in the end zone. And to be honest with you, Sean, it was actually a very natural feel in there, despite the fact that you knew you were in a cavernous dome. This is going to be completely different. The court is in the center of the field, and they build out from there. And it just, for whatever reason, because North Carolina is so inside prone, your inside game can play in a dome.